alien life forms. Ours is not to reason why. Ours is but to do or become permanently deactivated.
To PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to the bunker, everybody. It's, it's April the 4th.
4-4.
4-4, and if you add 2 plus 6, you get 8, which is 4-4. So in a way, it's 4-4-4-4.
Yes.
It's just amazing what you can do with numbers if you have nothing else to do all
day
long,
right.
Isn't it?
It's like they say, numbers don't lie, but liars can number. I don't know.
Something like that. Well, folks, it's 7:25:06 bunker savings time.
That's right. That's UTC minus 5 now that we're on savings time.
Uh-huh.
Greenwich Mean minus 6 probably, but UTC minus 5 just to make sure we're internet compliant here. We're in full compliance.
We want to be in full compliance at all time.
That's right.
Oh, gosh. You know, I feel so much better tonight, honey. Oh, day 3 of this program is much better than day 2.
The program is sound. Don't question the program. It is tough. Like I said, I tried it twice doing this modified Atkins thing where you basically go low sugar, low carb. And I try not to eat a lot of junk carbs, but it's really difficult to do when you consider that there are carbs that you just sort of take for granted. I like to have an apple. I like to have an orange mm-hmm. with my lunch mm-hmm. every day.
Those are
orange
not allowed juice. The first 2 weeks.
That's right. And, boy, that was really tough. So, I like this warrior diet much better where I basically don't eat but maybe a snack or two, maybe a yogurt or something until about 3-4 in the afternoon. And then
I
can
eat love the armor
whatever
you
I want. Yeah, that's pretty cool,
too. The furs and the skins.
Help me get into the proper frame of writing for Iron Dragons.
They do. By the way, Iron Dragons, it's going to be up next week, we think.
Yep.
We just have one more step, and that's something that will just take a matter of a few minutes, actually.
Yeah.
But we got the final copy. It looks great. I tell you what, I'm so proud of you.
Well, thank you. I'm happy with the way it turned out.
And I think it's a book that's needed. There aren't enough teen books out there, and teens and 20s, frankly, what they call the tweens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There just aren't enough out there that are written, you know, you didn't write it from an overtly Christian worldview, but you also didn't write it from a Wiccan worldview.
Well, that's true.
What's important.
Yeah, there are a group of men in there who are referred to as wizards because they can manipulate their space, basically, mm-hmm. you know, the world around them. But it's not through magic.
People aren't doing incantations in there.
There are no incantations or chanting, and it turns out that if you've got any kind of science background at all, you'll figure out pretty quickly why the dragons fly and why the Brothers of the Order can fight them
exactly.
on their own terms. So
it's a great book. It is a great book. And,
yep.
and pretty soon, in the next couple of days, we'll have a link up there where you can go to purchase your copy.
Yes.
And, you know, somewhere down the road, we're going to have to use your book, you know, give it away to somebody who you know, answers a question or does something cool. We'll figure out some
good idea
giveaway for that. Lots in the news.
Crass commercialism. there is a lot in the news. And by the way, because the storm unexpectedly preempted our scheduled interview with Guy Malone on Sunday afternoon.
It squashed
afternoon, it did. Like it squashed the cap from the chimney that I had to go out and stick back on top of the
hail damage on our roof. So
yeah, well, again, still we're not complaining
still here.
Because the folks in Tennessee had to deal with a lot more than we did, so no complaints there. We went back into the archives and found the first interview that we did with Guy Malone, and we're going to present that over the next couple of nights. It's a good foundational interview, and we'll follow that with the first interview that we did with Mike Heiser in two parts. We think this is a good foundational series to explain why we even pay attention to what goes on in the UFO community.
Mm-hmm.
We don't talk about it a lot, but we do keep tabs on it, and this should explain why. And we think it's important timing because Guy and Mike are working together to present the Da Vinci Code Conference on the 22nd of April, 2006.
That's right.
Now, Mike is a credentialed scholar, knows what he's talking about, and Guy has been the organizing force behind the Ancient of Days Bible UFO Conferences down in Roswell, New Mexico. This year, instead of a UFO conference, he's doing the Da Vinci Code Conference a few weeks ahead of the release of the Ron Howard Tom Hanks movie. Mm-hmm. So now we're going to present the foundational background for those of you who have discovered PID Radio over the last few months. Both of these interviews were conducted last spring, almost a year ago exactly. So if you get a chance to catch
back up. Back in our black and white days.
That's right. In fact, the interview with Guy was from the very first show that we called PID Radio.
That's right.
Because we started out calling it MythArk.
Yeah, and if that confuses you, those of you going way back, well, I think we do explain it in that show. Mm-hmm. So if it's in there, then you'll get the whole thing. But essentially, it was moving away from our old publishers. That's really we're no longer with our old publishers. You know, the first books that I did are still with them. They still have the rights to publish those, mm-hmm. but everything else is done through us. So anyway, that's what that amounts to. And I like PID better anyway.
Yes, because it explains what we're doing: peering into darkness, mm-hmm. or people in dungeon, which is sort of like our. We're getting silly. Let's get on to the news before the interview.
Okay. Well, it's about it's about Mexican flags and bees in their mouths.
Okay.
Killer bees.
Killer bees.
Killer
in Kansas.
Bees are in Kansas. Now you know what? It was 1975 when I first heard about killer bees, mm-hmm. and I was maybe 1 year old. Mm-hmm. No, I was a lot older than that. I first heard about killer bees. There were books out about this, and at the same time, mind you, there were books out about the whole Earth flipping over. That was a big thing that it was scaring. Pole shift. It mm-hmm. was a big scare at the time. But the killer bees were just starting to move north, mm-hmm. and I remember being terrified. Seriously terrified that they were going to hit Indiana. Not knowing much about them at the time, mm-hmm. because at that time I was terrified of anything that flew and buzzed, mm-hmm. wasps, hornets, bees.
June bugs,
yeah. Or anything that flew with a buzz. hippies. But Kansas is not a place I ever thought would have to worry about killer bees because Kansas is a temperate zone. It has a cold winter. Bees tend not to like that. Killer bees,
well,
the Africanized bees, which is what are killer bees. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised they must be adapting to colder winters.
Yeah, you would think so. They've been discovered two counties south of the Kansas state line in Oklahoma now, and it does get relatively cold in northern Oklahoma at times. They mm-hmm. get snow there. They get some heavy snow at times.
Yeah.
But the bees are either adapting or they are interbreeding with the European honeybees that
well, they've been
we
doing
it
with that all along. Mm-hmm. All along the way, they've been interbreeding. And it could be that they are eventually, and this is my prayer, that eventually the mean streak that's in them mm-hmm. will breed out. And as I remember, the whole reason for bringing them over anyway is because the African bees created a bunch of honey.
They make a lot of honey, but they defend it very aggressively. Mm-hmm. The sting of an individual Africanized bee is no more dangerous than the sting of a regular honeybee. It's just that they don't give up. They will
chase. I don't
chase.
Think they lose their stinger.
I
think they can sting.
Think that they do.
Do
it's
they?
That, yes, they do. It's just that they will pursue people for up to a mile once they begin an attack. Anyone within 50 feet of a within 50 feet of a colony of killer bees is a target. Mm. And anyone with a power tool or a lawnmower within 100 feet can be attacked.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
I was attacked
yard,
by wasps one mm-hmm. year because I was trimming the lawn.
Right. And that's no fun. Now, our backyard here, your typical subdivision-sized lot, can be from 60 to 75 feet wide. So they can be in your neighbor's yard. And if you're working with a lawnmower outside, you could stir them up, and mm-hmm. then you're in real trouble.
Oh, yeah.
So that's the thing. They just come after you, and they don't stop. The more docile domestic honeybees don't do that. So
And these Africanized bees, they have little Mexican flags.
Which is how you can spot them coming.
Absolutely. No. They're just the, advance guard.
The advance guard, yes.
The advance guard.
Well,
maybe this isn't. Maybe tomorrow I'll have thorough, clear thinking.
Yeah, and I'm not really on top of it either. In fact, I called in sick from work today because I'm suffering a head cold, and Woke up this morning with it felt like I had a couple of golf balls
really
stuffed in the back
most
of my
of the day.
In the back of my throat. But we shall muddle through. The issue of immigration is one that's still on the front burner. We talked about this last night for a bit, and just saw an interesting comparison in the news before we started recording tonight of the wave of illegals crossing the border from Mexico, 85% of whom, according to information we saw on Fox News today, are Mexican, is like a slow-speed invasion, really. And when you think about it, and think about the fact that Mexico and the United States allow people to hold dual citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
People who become naturalized citizens in the U.S. can hold citizenship elsewhere. So you've got a lot of people in the U.S., naturalized Mexicans, who still vote in Mexican elections and still hold citizenship in Mexico. And we've talked about the need for immigration reform. If people really want to become American citizens, I said the other day that I don't think they should have to wait 7 years to go through the process. But
no, that's true.
Along with that, I don't think they should be allowed to keep their citizenship in the other country.
No, I don't think so either. Good heavens, if we became citizens of, say, the U.K., because you and I have talked about maybe someday moving
to Scotland
because I just would love to live there, we would not be able to keep our U.S. citizenship.
I wouldn't think so.
No.
No, I mean, we could possibly, well, yeah, you're right. And it wouldn't make sense. I mean, if you're going to go to the new country and become citizens, you transfer citizenship to your new home nation.
You'd think so.
That's what our ancestors did.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't have dual citizenship with, you know, where our great grandfathers and grandmothers came from.
Well, it gives you a conflict of interest.
You would think so. Now, having said that, I'd like to point out that our chairman, our secretary of the Department of Homeland Security is a dual citizen of Israel.
There are quite a number of people in the United States who are also citizens of Israel.
Right. And I think a lot of us would probably assume that, oh, well, that's okay. Okay, especially those of us who consider ourselves conservative Christians would probably think, well, that's all right, be a dual citizen of the U.S. and Israel. But the more we get into the influence that the neocons have on American foreign policy and how it seems to be benefiting Israel more than the United States, you have to wonder whether that's a good idea. And if we're going to adopt a change in immigration that says, look, we don't want people with dual loyalties, either you're a citizen of the United States or you're a citizen of somewhere else,
mm-hmm.
I think that should apply to every other nation.
Oh, I totally agree.
Canada, the UK, Israel, Australia, South America, because I certainly wouldn't expect them to have a policy any different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we were to move to Australia, I would expect to give up my U.S. citizenship.
Eventually, it's going to be citizenship in either a region or simply world citizenship.
And the fact that that exists, I think, is exactly the point. And we were talking before the program tonight about this Aztlan movement, because again, as Anglos, this sort of takes us by surprise. Yes, mm-hmm. we realize that our forefathers and Anglos that have colonized North America weren't necessarily above board in many of the dealings that we had with the people who were here previous. However, what do the Aztlan, those in the Aztlan movement, hope to gain by retaking the American Southwest?
Exactly. You and I were talking about this very thing, and it's the one aspect I don't quite get. And no one's really talking about that, I've found. What do they want? Is it natural resources? Is it access to these wonderful businesses and cities that are in the, you know, the areas that they're hoping to gain?
Yeah.
I got to tell you, if tomorrow we woke up and found the border had been redrawn and Mexico had control again over all of those territories, Utah, California, you know, New Mexico, Arizona, Texas, you know. Well, I think if you and I, if Missouri were in there, you and I would just say, I don't think we want to live in Mexico. We're moving.
Yeah, exactly. Iowa's starting to look pretty good right now. Or Indiana or Illinois, somewhere else north of the line.
And I think if we were business people, we'd take our business with us.
Probably so. Wow. There are some businesses who might just say, gee, now I can operate my factory without having to worry about American environmental regulations or minimum wage laws.
Exactly. And if you're a businessman, you can say to the Mexican government, I'm moving my business.
Unless. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that sort of defeats the purpose for the people who are coming north hoping for a better life. Because
right.
then suddenly, instead of American social services, you're getting Mexican social services, which, if they were that good to begin with, there wouldn't be 3 million people crossing the Rio Grande every year.
Exactly, which means that they're going to continue to want to get into the United States.
Right, which means that instead of trying to cross the Rio Grande, they're going to be trying to get across the Missouri or wherever the new northern border is.
Yeah.
So we're just wondering, again, why is the Aslan movement picking up so much support? What do they really hope to gain? And the only thing that really makes sense after we've been talking about this is the idea that the Collins brothers put out there, that this is possibly a movement that is being funded by wealthy Americans and other Westerners to foment a class war, a race
mm-hmm.
war
yes.
in the American Southwest.
Yeah.
To create the chaos from which they will set up their new order.
Steve Quayle said it well the other day on his show. It was yesterday's show, it may have been, in fact, and it was when he was talking about nation shall rise against nation, which is scriptural. And nation could easily mean racial groups.
Yeah, very possibly.
Not just country against country.
Mm-hmm.
Because it says nation against nation, kingdom against kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
So that sounds like two different things, kingdom being country.
We think of political units as
right,
opposed
exactly.
to people groups, right?
A nation, people groups. So within a country, you mm-hmm. can have a race war going on. And, you know, getting back to Charlie Manson, who we talked about mm-hmm. way back when we were chatting with Peter Lavenda, so many things seem to come back in nexus on Charlie Manson
mm-hmm.
that he really believed that there was a race war about to start. And he believed that the Beatles' White Album had songs in it mm-hmm. with coded messages regarding the beginning of the race war. And he believed that he was supposed to be part of fomenting that race war.
Yeah. And I was not aware because I was a little young at the time, but Peter Lavenda does a good job of pointing out the steps that Charlie Manson took after the killings, the Tate-LaBianca killings, to try to cast blame on the Black Panthers, planting evidence to make it look as though it were racially motivated.
Yeah. By the way, Derek is younger than I am, for those of you who are wondering about that. And if you can guess how much younger Derek is than I am, then, well, good for you.
Well, let's move along. There's another story that
we
talked about.
I'll share my favorite low-carb recipes with you.
Ooh, that might be worth it. That'd be really worth it. You come up with some good ones. A story that we talked about before that made it to the Supreme Court yesterday, and they handed down a decision, and their decision was not to decide on the case of Jose Padilla versus Donald Rumsfeld. This is an important case, as we mentioned before, because this is the one on which rests the question of whether the President of the United States has the constitutional authority to declare a United States citizen an enemy combatant, have him arrested, and locked away indefinitely
mm-hmm.
without writ of habeas corpus, without ever bringing him to trial.
Well, surely they said, no, he can't do that.
Well, in a 6-3 decision, the U.S. Supreme Court declined to hear the case.
You know what I find really interesting about those numbers?
Mm-hmm.
Because before, there was a decision regarding this case that was 5-4.
That's correct. 2 years ago, there was a 5-4 decision in this case. And again, they took the weasel way out. It's because in the case that was the case that was filed 2 years ago, Padilla's lawyers filed in New York, but by then he had been transferred to a military brig in Charleston, South Carolina. So the Supreme Court declined to hear the case by a 5-4 vote mm-hmm. by saying, "No, sorry, you should have filed it in South Carolina."
Mm-hmm.
So now it's a 6-3 because, of course, we've replaced two of the justices.
Right.
And the president got two of his guys in, Alito and the new Chief Justice John Roberts, who voted for the majority, or Roberts and this kind of surprised me. Justice John Paul Stevens voted with the six. Now, John Paul Stevens usually is considered a liberal member mm-hmm. of the court, but the reason they voted not to hear the case was because, as we discussed when Padilla was finally charged with a crime a couple of months ago, that this was a maneuver by the Justice Department to prevent the Supreme Court from ruling on the constitutionality of the president's
decision. Because it's a moot decision at this point.
It's a moot decision because now Padilla has been charged with a crime. So now, you know, you're right. It's a moot point.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, I think, again, it's the Supreme Court taking the weasel way out. They did what the White House wanted them to do.
And what it remains that the White House can indeed say anyone is an enemy combatant and will hold you indefinitely.
Mm-hmm. The interesting thing here, and this is why we're making such a big deal of this, is because the case against Padilla appears to be very flimsy. When Padilla was arrested and charged, or accused, I should say, not charged, he was accused in 2002 by Attorney General Ashcroft of plotting to detonate a dirty atomic bomb, a dirty bomb. But rather than charge him with any crime, they just locked him up. They declared him an enemy combatant. He was arrested on U.S. soil. Padilla is an American citizen. Now, that combination of facts should be very frightening to any of us out here. Because basically what has happened is that this guy has been locked away, kept from family and attorneys by a presidential decree. They finally, through legal maneuvering, they basically kept this guy in solitary confinement for the better part of 4 years. They finally charged him with a case, or charged him with a crime, but they have, there's no mention of this dirty bomb in the charges that have been filed against him now.
How very interesting and convenient.
Yeah. He has been charged with basically conspiring to support terrorism, assisting a support cell in the United States. And it is going to be very interesting to see how this progresses. Now, what is interesting, though, is that Justice Kennedy, Anthony Kennedy, who voted with the minority, no, I take it back. Kennedy did vote with the majority here. He did note in the decision that there is a loophole that allows people to seek a reprieve directly from the Supreme Court, regardless of lower court proceedings. Justice Kennedy said Padilla still has the option of going directly to the Supreme Court, filing a separate appeal, and seeking a writ of habeas corpus directly from the Supremes.
Mm-hmm. And that's not the vocal group.
Exactly. And so this sort of puts the White House on notice. It's like, yeah, okay, under the law, he's been charged with a crime, so his original case may not have merit, but we are still letting his attorneys know and letting you know that we know. That they know.
Did you know that?
Yeah, that they have this option open to them. So, but, you know, again, it just proves that we are in an alternate universe because now I find myself agreeing with Ruth Bader Ginsburg on something, and that's just
nothing. I dreamed last night that I was buddies with Hillary Clinton.
Oh!
I know. I know. I think it's this diet I'm on.
Yeah, well, it's the state of the nation that we find ourselves in, that we're agreeing with people like Dick Durbin and the Senate Schumer from New York, and it's
frightening.
Really,
but you
bizarre.
Know, one guy I do agree with is Guy Malone.
He's our number one guy,
and I think that we should go to that interview. When was this? About it was almost a year ago.
This was May of 2005.
Almost a year. It's
11
really,
months ago. 11.
11. Well, you know what? You're really going to enjoy this if you have not listened to this interview before. This is a treat. If you've heard it before, you know what? Pay attention again, because more than likely there are some things you missed. So here's part one with Guy Malone.
Guy Malone, thanks for joining us on Peering Into Darkness Radio.
Good old PID Radio. How you doing?
Pretty good.
How's the weather in Roswell, New Mexico today?
Always sunny and hot, actually. My standard greeting on email is greetings from sunny Roswell, New Mexico. That's about 300 days of the year. If we get cloud, we get sun. Right now, it's summertime. It's going to be sunny and hot until fall.
Until December.
Yeah.
How did you end up in Roswell?
It's kind of a calling, I would imagine. I posted a page years ago when I lived in Nashville after the Heaven's Gate suicide that I guess most people are familiar with that, but I should mention it, that 39 people killed themselves believing they would hop on a UFO and then enter heaven that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a pretty wrong spiritual belief, and I just began a webpage from my own. You'd call it a thesis, I guess. New Testament. It's a book that was hard copy. It's kind of out of print, but you can read it online on UFOs and Christianity. Just a very 101 look at each, comparison, contrast with the overall implication that this stuff is demonic and deceptive. Anything that's going to make you hop on a, you know, kill yourself to enter heaven via a UFO, you know, I believe in the First Amendment. People are free to believe whatever they want to, but my opinion, which I expressed there, is they were deceived. That's a demonic doctrine that would take people to hell.
Amen to
that. So with that webpage, it's Come Sail Away, UFOs in the Bible. Like I said, it's very introductory 101 view of the New Age or demonic deceptive aspects of the spiritual aspects, I'd say, of ufology, the UFO phenomena. That page was pretty popular at the time in 97, 98, 99. The internet was a pretty small place, and mm-hmm. you got a lot of traffic just if you had a website, period.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember those days. I was back in Bloomington, Indiana when that happened, and I remember getting on, at least I think it was, either that or I just moved here, and I remember getting online and going to that website, and of course it crashed very quickly.
Oh,
because
my
there were so many,
or?
No, not yours, no,
oh, okay.
The website of the Heaven's Gate people. As soon as it hit the news, because they had a website, everybody who had access to the internet was there, and it crashed very quickly, but there were a lot of really sad doctrine on there.
And he said he was like a minister's son. They claimed to be the reincarnation of the father and Jesus, mm-hmm. this couple, Ty and Doe, Marshall Applewhite, and I don't remember right. the woman's name. But anybody that's just a normal Christian, whether they care or know anything about ufology or UFOs or anything, they just know, well, that's wrong, that's mm-hmm. lies, that's mm-hmm. from the pit of hell. So I had my own interest in UFOs lifelong, but I never did anything as far as writing or speaking or, you know, getting into it in a heavy way, but I knew I'd had a calling for some time to write what I felt about this, and that event is what sparked me to put it on the web finally. I got a lot of email over time. I found myself answering email pretty much hours and hours a day. It kind of turned into full-time ministry, just not the kind you get paid for. You just sit at home after work and do it.
Well, at least not the kind you get paid for here on this earth.
True.
You get paid for
true.
It.
Great retirement program. The benefits are awesome as far as
yeah.
I know. But I eventually realized I had a calling or this wild harebrained idea to move from Nashville, Tennessee to Roswell, New Mexico to get the book located in Roswell, because so many people I've found come here looking for the truth on UFOs, or they want their opinion. It's like a mecca for people that are the least bit into that. They will go out of their way sooner or later in their life, if mm-hmm. it ever at all possible, to come here. So I just wanted the book to be available among all the other stuff they have to choose from. So mentioned it kind of to my pastor, who I thought would be kind and talk me out of it as something crazy, but they really affirmed the vision and really blessed the idea that God would call me here as a missionary, even though I had no clue what I'd be doing other than trying to get the book into the tourist hotspots like the UFO Museum.
Hmm.
And that's how I wound up here in 1999.
What kind of success did you have getting the book placed in the tourist spots?
None whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. So they don't
why
want
I wound
to
up staying.
Yeah. Well, I suppose they have
they,
exactly. They want their alien vision to remain an alien vision, and I guess they don't want to for people to really see the truth behind it.
Yeah, the UFO Museum told me they had a policy that anything dealing with religion, they didn't carry the book in their gift shop.
Hmm.
And now I looked around, and, you know, just from where we were standing, I pointed to like three or four things
mm-hmm.
that I'd seen before. It was New Age religion.
Right.
And they were okay with that. But it worked. It was providential, I guess, because my only plan on moving there was to drop off my book, find a few tourist hot spots, and I didn't think I would live in Roswell for long, like 6 or 9 months, but I did move there, period, just without any real clue what I'd be doing. So it kind of became a joke that the UFO Museum wouldn't carry it because it dealt with religion, then the local Christian bookstore on Main Street wouldn't carry it because it dealt with UFOs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, rock and a hard place, all that stuff. But
yep.
Finally, after months there, I got the vision idea or whatever to open up my own place in downtown Main Street. And that was the officially dubbed Alien Resistance Headquarters after a second website I began. I can tell you more about that later.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a bookstore that offered biblical perspectives on UFOs and abductions. from various authors. I was one of them. But since nobody would carry the book, I just kind of joked around just to be a smart aleck, open my own place. Now that you're here, this is the only location in Roswell that offers biblical perspectives on UFOs and abductions.
And have you had good traffic?
Fairly well. I've now in my third location, and it's actually run by a couple that moved here a little more than a year ago. Just like in the last month or two, this has gone on. But the best location I had was right across the street from the UFO Museum.
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah, sweet.
They could, you know, anybody in their parking lot could see it. You know, I had my URL up in the sign. We offered internet access and coffee, so it got people wandering in that weren't really interested. What I found over the years of doing it is that 95% of the people who were there in Roswell and who would be walking into my store, they weren't really what I would consider my target audience. People who kind of, sort of, were interested in or believed in this stuff and either wanted or needed a spiritual viewpoint, much less a Christian viewpoint, or to know, or getting into, you know, most of the people, they were just there because they're traveling. They pulled over because Roswell is Roswell. They'll take a look at some pictures and some laughs and wander through the UFO Museum, buy some trinket or T-shirt, and, you know, take some funny photos downtown and then get on their way.
Mm-hmm.
The people that it is a destination or mecca for were pretty rare as far as, you know, how many would actually cross the street. I mean, it was five lanes, a little five-lane main street that they would have to walk across to come see us. But we still did get decent traffic. It was never self-supporting, though, as far as we sold enough books or internet or coffee to pay for everything. A lot of it just continued to come out of my pocket. After I started putting the conferences together, it just seems my direction has shifted that way. There's definitely people interested in this stuff. They came to the conference. One of my web pages gets over 1,000 unique visitors a day. And I have a link up there to prove that. I'm not just saying it, but you can look at the statistics. And so I know, even though Roswell is a good idea, it's a good place to start. And really, it's like having, if you're into this field, living in Roswell is like having PhD at the end of your name. It's better. People just assume you're an expert. So
I like that.
I have that going on. But I see more in the future is the conferences I've done with mostly Christian speakers who are really studied on the subject, and they're not debunkers. There's enough interest in that to where I can see myself, I'm trying to schedule more and more out-of-town things, because I've gotten pretty experienced going to UFO conferences, secular ones anyway, just set up a table with books and stuff like that and talk to people. And the interest is there. It's just as far as if you're going to sit around in a storefront and wait for them to come to you, that doesn't really have a lot of traffic as far as my target audience. So it's kind of like seek and save that which was lost. I know the interest is there. I know from the website. I know from the response to our DVDs and conferences we've done. So in the future, what I did was I closed the storefront on Main Street, and a couple that helps me out a lot is doing it out of, they have a studio, art glass and stuff.
So
Alien Resistance Headquarters still exists in Roswell, just at a different location, scaled down a little bit too with books and DVDs. And I plan to be going out to find the people who really want to settle into the meat of this and see, and just find out what the Bible has to say, go to hotels or churches and have small one-day conferences.
Now, you mentioned the conference. We should talk this up a little bit, because this is a pretty unique event, at least as far as what we can tell from the little bit of research we've done into this whole topic. The Ancient of Days UFOs and Biblical Prophecy Conference, which comes up in early July, 4th of July weekend. And why did you pick that particular weekend, and what is the focus of the conference?
Sure. July 4th is the believed date of the Roswell crash in 1947. So Roswell, for close to the last decade, has had a fairly large UFO festival here in town on July 4th weekend. In 97, it was in all the news and headlines that they drew 40,000 to 50,000 people to Roswell, which is a town of less than 50,000, and you couldn't get a hotel room for hours away was the problem. They've continued having a UFO festival where they have just various speakers, and it's intended to be a fun event. They don't get a whole lot of serious speakers or researchers on the topic, a few, but, you know, they'll try to have a carnival atmosphere for it. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of people, if they're the least bit interested in UFOs, a trip to Roswell would be fun for them. So a couple years ago, I began a conference that had six Christian speakers that I'd met mostly on the Internet who had really awesome work on this stuff. I mean, very credible, well-received among non-Christian audiences in most cases. You've interviewed Mike Kaiser. He was one of them.
Right.
And that was the Ancient of Days conference in 2003. What I did, but what we covered was this Genesis 6 angle of mm-hmm. fallen angels mating with human women and the parallels to how that activity seems to be repeating itself today.
Right.
That's kind of one of the big premises you'll get off any of our sites is that contactees, people that are abductees or in communication with entities, our main premise is that it's a repeat of what you see in Genesis 6. Mm-hmm.
Genetic manipulation.
Muck up the DNA.
And even beyond that, just the whole aspect of fallen angels having sex with women.
Mm-hmm.
That's really kind of the repeated thing that you see both in Genesis 6, extra-biblically, the Book of Enoch,
mm-hmm.
but the technology that they were supposedly giving mankind and advancing technology, there's a ton of parallels between that. It's pretty commonly known now in Internet circles, I would say. In 97 and 99, when I built the alienresistance.org website, it was very new information, though, and there wasn't a lot of credible writing or Bible studies on it. But we covered all that as a live conference that I'd probably say less than 50 people attended in 2003. In 2004, I brought back most of those same speakers and had a total of 14 speakers, but seven were not Christians. They were just modern, very credible secular researchers into the UFO phenomena. Some of mm-hmm. the top names, so to speak, like Richard Dolan and John Greenwald.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You're familiar with those guys?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I certainly am.
Stephen Bassett is a 50. He's got a political action committee in Washington, D.C. for pressing the government to tell the truth on UFOs.
Oh.
He was the fellow who organized the X conference.
Exactly.
That's why his name is familiar. Yeah.
He's done two of those in Washington, D.C. He was our keynote speaker for the dinner banquet last year. Mixed it up across three and a half days, really, to where we had both Christian and non-Christian speakers hearing one another out. You know, I made it plain that no point of view is unwelcome here, but it has to be based on research, not on dogma.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to prove why you're saying what you're saying and, you know, sound convincing to an audience that may or may not be sympathetic already with your point of view. Then we had like a three-hour panel discussion after that was over among most of the speakers. That was cool. That was historic. Generally speaking, because of the demonic aspects that Christians see or the deceptive religion, the UFO community and the Christian church are just short of natural enemies. Don't get along well at all. You know, don't talk to me about that stuff. I don't believe you. You know, whatever camp you're hearing new information from, you think they're just full of crap mainly.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a very historic and amiable meeting of the minds. But as far as a pattern, you know, you're asking, you know, why this theme for this year? It seemed pretty obvious. In 2003, we definitely covered the ancient past, ancient records, ancient texts, especially around the Genesis 6 and Enoch stuff. In 2004, it was the modern stuff, the best modern research of the 20th century in UFO research. So that left, okay, well, what would be the next logical thing to do? We've done the past, we've done the present. What's that leave?
Mm-hmm.
And so we're concentrating on Bible prophecy in 2005 in mm-hmm. July. And the main thing I'm going to have to make clear in the opening remarks or when I begin this, people come down, is that when you get the Genesis 6 paradigm, when you understand that that really is dealing with angels who were intermingling with humanity, that changes your whole view of the Old Testament.
Because mm-hmm.
you realize that, you know, all of us, Christian or not, you start reading the Bible and you get to the parts where God says, go kill all the men, women, and children in this tribe. Don't leave anyone standing. Don't, you know, kill the animals. That gives you a very freaked out or unloving view of God. You just
right.
don't want anything to do with this God person.
That's right. For our audience, I just want to explain that the barking you hear
yeah.
are our three dogs. They're singing in the background. They don't like fallen angels. They don't even want to hear about it.
And we suspect that often when they're barking at things we can't see, it's things that they can see. And so that's why we have...
Really?
Yeah. So they are our alarm system. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And they are completely snoozing right now because
are
it's
they?
Hot here. Yeah, it's kind of warm.
Well, we've got a little cool spell coming through here, so ours are very active today.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to roll past the dogs and just figured they'd get quiet in a minute without commercial interruption or whatever. The Genesis 6 stuff, once you realize that what God is commanding the Israelites to wipe out there is the Nephilim, the fallen hybrid races, the
right.
giants. That every Mike Heiser did a wonderful talk on Genesis 6 and going through the Old Testament. He showed their lineage, their nationality, and then he just walked you through the Old Testament. Everywhere that they wandered and were instructed to kill people, they were these Nephilim people that were kind of supplanting, taking over humanity.
Mm-hmm.
But all I said was, once you get the Genesis 6 thing, it changes your view of the Old Testament.
Yeah,
amen
absolutely.
To that.
Absolutely.
Amen to that.
Then you begin to see stuff in the New Testament that you didn't quite, you're like, oh, wait a minute. This is spiritual, and this is very real as far as the fallen angels, because the church is not historically faithfully taught that view of Genesis 6. I'll keep that short right now and tell more about that in a bit. But eventually... You almost, well, wait a minute. Well, if it changes your view of the Old Testament, if it changes your view of the New Testament, it does begin to, you see things in your interpretation of Bible prophecy that have never been brought out by any of the main 20th century teachers you may know of, like Hal Lindsey, just for instance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There seems
mm-hmm.
to be this cottage industry of Bible prophecy teachers that's sprung up in the last 20, 25 years.
That's right.
You might say since 1947 in Israel, because that was, you know, very important on the prophetic clock.
And it's no coincidence that Roswell happened at the same time.
Yeah, you're right. That's a... the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered in 47.
Mm-hmm.
Israel declared herself a nation. And the way I did that in one talk on the Book of Enoch, since that was rediscovered and reaffirmed by the Dead Sea Scrolls, is on one end of the globe, a mystery falls from the sky. And then on the other end, over in Israel, the earth belches up one of its mysteries.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good way to put it.
Everything in the Dead Sea Scrolls affirms what Genesis 6 and the Book of Enoch say about these supernatural beings, whether you call them aliens or angels, we'll just leave it at non-human supernatural entities that were taking human women and giving mankind advanced technology on the earth.
Mm-hmm.
So as you present that, I'm like, well, in 1947, the Dead Sea Scrolls come out affirming everything that the Bible teaches about that thing, is that as one mystery is falling from the sky, it's almost like providentially, this is God's answer.
Mm-hmm.
So that the church can understand the era that began in 1947. The church can really get a good foothold into understanding these entities that are now appearing globally again. Because it seems like for a couple thousand years, it wasn't a big problem, at least for the Western church. But eventually, what I'm letting the speakers run with is a little bit of speculation. Everybody's got very different views on prophecy, it seems. You know,
mm-hmm.
rapture, no rapture, pre-trib, mid, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, amillennial, on and on. But the common denominator is that all these speakers, they get the Genesis 6 paradigm. So the question, or what they're going to be allowed to elaborate on, according to their area of research and specialty, is how does the Genesis 6 paradigm in general and UFOs in specific fit into your view of future end time events? It's pretty generically known. Christianity 101 involves revelation, teaching a one world government under Antichrist, and a grand delusion that would fool even the elect if that were possible.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the common theories I started with in my book in 1997, which I consider very 101 now, is that if a rapture happens and all the Christians are taken away, or many of them, that the world is going to explain that as an alien abduction.
Mm-hmm. I think that's very likely.
It's very likely.
Yeah.
And oddly enough, it was a new idea in 97. But I got all kinds of email from people saying, oh, that's perfect, or I've always thought that. I've just never seen it so well elucidated or written out as mm-hmm. a Bible study thesis as I did in my first book. Now, there's many Christians who don't believe in the rapture at all. They just don't take that futuristic end times view of Revelation, or they think that the rapture happens so much later in the tribulation period that it would be an unnecessary deception. Mm-hmm. Well, why would you say it's alien? You know, everything's falling apart by then anyway. But that's one view, and some of the speakers are going to be playing off of that theme. But between Mike Heiser, who you're familiar with, mm-hmm. he's doing the Sons of God, the Genesis 6 term for the angels, and mm-hmm. biblical prophecy. People, there's one who has built anti-gravity machines for the U.S. and Australian government, Stan Deo. He's going to be talking about anti-gravity and the technological aspects of the New World Order. Norm Franz will be dealing mostly in economics of the New World Order and even how that relates to UFO research he's lectured on and printed out before.
Mm-hmm.
Another guy is talking, Bill Schnobelin is doing UFOs, masonry, and the occult social order, of how UFOs fit into the occult social order of both the New Age movement and then the future, you know, what he believes about the future of mankind and Bible prophecy. So I'm giving them all the flexibility to be a little speculative, to disagree with each other a little bit. But it's most people want to know, you know, no matter how good you are at teaching or convincing, good or no matter how well received you are on the Genesis 6, you know, everyone will say, well, what's the practical implications of this to me? Why should I care?
Sure.
Essentially. So pinning down where in Bible prophecy this stuff potentially or possibly fits, it makes it really hit home. It's pretty relevant. They're like, oh, I see this now. I see why this is important now. I see why Christians need to be educated in this stuff, because it does affect, you know, a lot of people believe, you know, whether you go back to Star Trek movie First Contact or Art Bell's term, The Quickening, that mm-hmm. there is a mm-hmm. massive event of some sort on the near horizon,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
where Stephen Bassett's word for it is disclosure, when the government formally and publicly acknowledges the extraterrestrial presence. Well, if you have these beings openly walking the streets and communing with humans, though, I mean, that seems to be the next event. The New Age movement interprets that as a wonderful thing coming up to help usher humanity into the New Age and
mm-hmm.
step up into the Galactic Brotherhood.
Mm-hmm.
It just so happens that most normal conservative Christian interpretations of that event link it to the end times.
Well, that was part one with Guy Malone, and yeah, I know after listening to that you're anxious to hear part two, but you're going to have to wait until tomorrow.
Yeah. It is, again, foundational stuff. Why should Christians care about UFOs?
Mm-hmm. And so many Christians, you know what, they look at UFOs and they go, well, that's really intriguing, but I can't rationalize that with scripture, so I'm going to have to ignore that.
Right.
Because that's wrong. That's evil stuff.
Yeah.
No, it's not. In fact, if you look at it as demons are the ones who are pretending to be
mm-hmm.
extraterrestrials, it all makes perfect sense.
Exactly. The grand end times deception. Program note, we want to make note of a couple of changes at the Remnant Radio Network, which has graciously been rebroadcasting these programs. Paul Pilgrim, the manager there, has changed his schedule so that our new program, Monday through Thursday, will be available and broadcast at 11 p.m. Central Time. That's UTC-5. On the Remnant Radio Network, you can find the website at remnantradio.org. So that means I need to hurry up so I can get this produced and uploaded to the web.
Yes.
He will, and then it will be rebroadcast tomorrow. The shows will be rebroadcast the following day at 1 o'clock Central Time, UTC-6. So if you don't get the podcast, you'd like to listen to it on the web, remnantradio.org is the website. And they've got a great collection of stuff there. Derry Brownfield's program. They've got Colonel Bo Greitz. They've got a great program about 7 o'clock weeknights called The Divided Kingdom, mm-hmm. which really touches on some great issues. A lot of really great stuff. And, of course, Friday night, our other favorite guy, Visigoth with From the Grassy Knoll. So we're proud to be part of the schedule there and to let you know you can hear us now twice a day, the new program at 11 o'clock Central Time every night and the next day at 1 p.m.
Well, honey, I think that about wraps it up for today.
Yep. We'll look for you again tomorrow. In the meanwhile, make sure you drop your notes, comments, suggestions, and
recipes
too. radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
And come join us at the forum. We should probably start a diet, you know, thread there. All those doing low carb. It's Peering into Darkness. www.uforeport.com/forum, and it's free. Just join up. Don't charge a thing.
Yeah. Until tomorrow, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Have a wonderful evening, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.
Gonna step up to the microphone. Say it loud and clear.